So we all know someone who has gone through cancer treatment, and most likely we're even related to someone, whether it's a parent, a grandparent, a child. For me, it was my wife, my dad, my father-in-law. And from the moment you get that call, the impact starts to happen, right? Stress, anxiety, sometimes depression. And then once treatment starts, side effects from that treatment can start too.
For me and my family, grandparents on both sides of my family were diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And of course, it was years ago, horrific diagnosis. But Pete, I don't ever recall them recovering through those horrific treatments. There just wasn't a lot of quality life at that time. Now, the good news is, along with conventional Western medicine, there are evidence-based complementary treatments now. It's a rapidly growing world of integrative oncology. Hi, everybody. I'm Macy Jepson.
And I'm Pete Kenworthy, and this is The Science of Health. Joining us today is Dr. Santosh Rao, Medical Director for Integrative Oncology at University Hospital's Connor Hall Health in Cleveland. He's also the president of the Society for Integrative Oncology. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Before we take a deep dive into specifics and the research behind it, could you give us kind of a high view of what integrative oncology is, its purpose?
So integrative oncology is looking at scientific evidence for the use of complementary therapies and really lifestyle education for people at any stage of their cancer treatment. And it's really about empowering people on what's safe, what's not safe, what's advisable, what's not advisable, and giving people choice and what is it that you should be able to do for yourself? What are some of the supportive things that we can use to reduce toxicity? You mentioned side effects. That's basically what integrative oncology is.
One of the many benefits of integrative oncology is taking care of pain, and that's both during and after treatment, I'm assuming. So I'd like to know a little more about that. Could you explain the impact of things like acupuncture, massage, other pain relief, and the research behind it?
Absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned guidelines and evidence. So we have guidelines around this. So you mentioned the Society for Integrative Oncology. We put forward 2 years ago a guideline that we did with the American Society for Clinical Oncology on pain. Cancer and pain go together very often. It's the most common symptom from cancer. So I'm an oncologist, and first things first, we always think about why the pain is occurring. So obviously, you have to first evaluate. If somebody has a hip fracture, deal with the hip fracture. We have obviously a lot of patients who are on narcotics, and so there's a lot of side effects from narcotics. If you can help manage somebody's pain to the point where either they don't need the narcotic or they need less of it, that's a win. And patients also feel the same way. So it's really about kind of finding the right approach to the specific patient. It's very personalized. And there are guidelines around this. And so a lot of it is trial and error. We treat different types of pain. So some of it is just frank pain, you know, whether it's bone pain or something else. Other people have neuropathic pain from previous treatment of chemotherapy. And then a lot of our cancer patients, like breast cancer patients who are on endocrine therapy, have joint pains. So there's different approaches for each of those. And acupuncture is one thing we use a lot for both neuropathy and joint pains, but can help with other types of pain. Massage, stress management has a role, and all of these things have a lot of research associated with them.
Obviously, there are huge benefits to controlling pain. The pain is lessened, but does it also impact the course of the treatment?
It can. I mean, so I think part of this is when you look at the data and the research around this, you know, pain causes suffering and can lead to mood disorders and depression. You know, it depends. If somebody's got advanced cancer, you know, part of it is having a desire to live and feel like you have quality of life. We know that if pain is uncontrolled, then people tend to not live as long and have more stress and everything else associated with it. So we don't want people to be in pain. In terms of their treatment, you know, it's part of your overall quality of life, and it impacts so many things. For example, if you're in pain, you may not exercise, or you may not want to do things that you find enjoyable, which ultimately does affect everything else as well. You might get more fatigued. You might have other side effects from that. We know pain can really influence sleep. So there's just a trickle-down effect that makes you really, really want to focus on controlling pain. But most of it for me is around quality of life and reducing suffering.
So a side effect that is common when receiving chemotherapy is what you talked about, peripheral neuropathy, right? When nerves are damaged, which causes weakness, numbness, pain, especially in the arms, legs, hands, and feet. But it can also impact other things like digestion and urination. So what can be done through integrative oncology, and how does that help with chemotherapy treatment?
Good question. So it's a really common side effect of a number of different types of chemotherapy. And it's something that can be what we call a dose-limiting side effect. So, you know, for some people, we have a plan of 6 months of chemo. And if somebody's starting to get these symptoms 2 months into it, you have to kind of make decisions about whether you're going to reduce the dose or ultimately for some people, whether they can continue. So it's a huge issue. It's also one of the symptoms, one of the main symptoms that somebody can be left with when they're done with all their treatment. So many times we're successful with treating the cancer, but then afterwards you may have chronic symptoms that can be really awful. It can affect how you function. And some people are on ongoing medications and it can become a really chronic, terrible symptom. So when I think about how we manage neuropathy, again, it's the story is building. So, you know, traditionally there are certain medications that we use and that's about it. Now we're getting more and more evidence that acupuncture can be helpful specifically for treatment of neuropathy. There's some evidence for prevention of neuropathy. I have myself seen that in experience in the past, but you know the research in that particular area is still building. It's very important. And then we know that there are other approaches to neuropathy as well. So it's been shown that stress management is helpful. There's some evidence for yoga for people who have neuropathy. And then in a kind of a different approach, we also at university hospitals have started using something called scrambler therapy. What that entails is putting some probes on the hands and feet and literally scrambling the message that's being sent to your brain. And that's also really, really effective. So a lot of times we will take a personalized approach. Some people need medication. Often we'll try acupuncture. If it's helpful, great. And if it's not working, then we might try scrambler therapy.
I want to be really clear before we move on from this. Your example was we prescribe a 6-week course of chemotherapy and they can only handle 2 weeks because of the pain. That's enormous, right? Because if they can't handle the dosage that they were prescribed, which will do the best for their clinical outcomes, you need to be able to control the pain. It has a huge impact on how they're treated.
Yeah, and to be clear, I mean, you know, we need to do more research. So I think that the more programs like ours that exist, you can talk to people and patients and physicians who use these strategies will tell you, I really do think this helps. I think we need to get more precise with the magnitude of the effect. Is this really lengthening how long somebody can take chemo? I think it does. And these are just some of the exciting opportunities we have with research to kind of show, you know, not only are you helping somebody with their symptoms, but if you can help somebody stay on their chemo, ultimately that improves outcomes as well.
I would imagine that insomnia is a major issue with cancer treatment, just the worry or even maybe, a physical side effect. Is that the case? And do you have something to help that?
Absolutely. So insomnia is this kind of catch-all symptom. Because it's very common, first of all, in the U.S. in general. It's increasing. So a lot of people have sleep disturbances. It's not just how much you sleep. It's the quality of sleep as well. And it gets affected by everything. So everybody who gets diagnosed with cancer obviously has that as a stress. And most people have other stresses as well. So it doesn't help. And so stress is a major part of that. If somebody has anxiety, which is super common with cancer, whether you're anxious about the treatment, anxious about the outcome, or even when people have positive outcomes, there's still a lot of fear of recurrence. So these things are very common. And then on top of that, you mentioned pain. There are other symptoms that can kind of cluster with sleep disturbance and anxiety. So if somebody's in pain or they have hot flashes, a lot of times that's why they have trouble sleeping or if they have to get up to urinate, all sorts of things. So we see it all the time.
What specifically do you do to treat those, though? If we're talking about insomnia, and you mentioned stress and anxiety, those things, all three of those things can be treated. How are they treated from that integrative oncology approach?
Yeah, so again, the integrative approach is really first and foremost getting to know the patient. So that process is really about working with that specific patient and ascertaining what is it that's going on. And, you know, I spend a lot of time just understanding what are the stressors. You have to get to know that first. What are the symptoms somebody's going through? So sometimes you have to deal with the symptom first. If somebody's having hot flashes and they're not sleeping because of that, if you don't treat the hot flashes, they're not going to sleep. So I first focus on that. If it's really around stress and anxiety, I think we have many things that we can try. And it really is about what works for which person. So acupuncture is something that is on the list, but a lot of times we will use massage therapy. We will use expressive arts. We have a fantastic music therapy department, for example. And I'm a big believer in yoga, breathing exercises, as well as mindfulness meditation and different types of meditation. And when you start talking about kind of how does somebody process their own stress, it has to be very personalized. We want to give people choice. Some people have their own routine. There are other people who have never really thought about it. And so that can be anywhere from expressing yourself in a variety of manners, doing some kind of exercise, which helps as well, or doing some kind of, you know, kind of a mind-body approach where you learn to regulate your breathing and you learn something like mindfulness. And there's a lot of evidence around this. And then sometimes we have to include people outside of our department. One of the most effective treatments, and probably the most effective treatment for insomnia, is what we call cognitive behavioral therapy, which is usually something that a psychologist employs. So it's really important to be collaborative and just being part of the team. You know, part of it is to think beyond just this particular approach. What is it that's right for which patient? And sometimes it might be us, sometimes it might be a psychologist.
A big fear for cancer patients is that the cancer will come back. So even people who have been deemed cancer-free, obviously worried in the back of their minds about recurrence, are there proven methods that actually lower that risk?
There are, and it's really so understandable. For those who've been diagnosed with cancer, it probably is just a very natural feeling. So I always try to first be understanding. We do know that mindfulness, and there are different types of mindfulness programs. There's a program called Mindfulness-Based Cancer Recovery. There's another program called Mindfulness-Oriented Recovery. And there are different types of programs that really focus on staying in the moment, trying not to think ahead, very difficult, thinking about what triggers your anxiety and fear. And those things have been shown to be very effective. I think ultimately, again, I am very collaborative, and I think alongside asking somebody to manage their own anxiety, it's on us as a field to improve our treatment. You know, I mean, the thing that would make somebody less anxious is if I say, you know, it's not going to come back, and we've done everything we can. So that it goes hand in hand. I don't sugarcoat it, right? So if it's normal to be afraid if you really think it's going to come back. So as the treatment gets better, part of it is explaining to people why you feel optimistic. And I think the empowerment part is really important because, you know, part of why I even do this is this idea of feeling helpless. So you go through all this treatment and suddenly you feel like, okay, what can I do? I just feel like this happened, you know, and now I've gone through all this treatment. And part of it is, what is it I can do for myself so I feel like I have some control over this? I'm part of this team.
You kind of mentioned this, but I think it's important to mention that integrative oncology isn't a one-size-fits-all approach. And you talked about this, and this is important for the integrative oncology side of things to figure out, right, what works for each patient. Because the anxiety in that patient isn't the same, or isn't the same treatment necessarily than the anxiety in another treatment. Or the pain in that from that same kind of treatment isn't the same for the pain in someone else, right? So if you have any specifics about how does that become individualized? Because some people might say, well, I can't be helped by this. I know my friend was, but it wouldn't work for me.
Yeah. I mean, and again, part of it is just being a good healthcare provider. You know, I think it's no different than any other doctor in our cancer center. So part of it is just listening and listening to that person and then thinking about, you know, what we add is just maybe some more options, maybe focusing a little bit more on somebody's self kind of stress management techniques, having those resources like music therapy and massage and those things. So I think part of it is just kind of giving a little bit more in terms of the menu. And then, you know, a lot of it is giving patients choice. So, you know, a lot of times people will already know what helps them, and you're just making it easier for them to utilize that. For somebody who doesn't have those tools that they've used before, they've never had dealt with something like this or whatever, then I think it's really walking them through and giving them, you know, many of the patients that I see, they're looking for some direction. So I'm not going to tell you have to do X, Y, or Z, but this is what I think will help. And most people are very open to that. So you are giving them guidance, but you're also giving them choice. And that's kind of how you do the personalization part of it.
You talked a lot about integrative oncology during your treatment. What about after? And what advice do you have for patients who don't have access to a Dr. Rao and a symptom clinic, and how they could navigate that with their oncologist to get these treatments?
That's a really good question. You did mention I'm president of the Society for Integrative Oncology. Part of it is, you know, building the story as to whether this should be a standard approach. And right now, it's not available everywhere. So, you know, I think that as the evidence is building and we're finding that, okay, you can do acupuncture and massage for pain and you can do all these great things, and then there's a positive outcome from that. If somebody who utilizes these modalities gets to use, has less pain or isn't taking as much narcotics, that's a real win. So what about somebody who doesn't have access? And a lot of my focus is, at least in this Cleveland area, is how do we make it accessible? We don't want to broaden the gap between people who can pay out of pocket and those who can't. I don't think that's fair. And so we've tried to design a lot of our programs that are based on insurance as much as possible. I think that these programs are building around the country, certainly around the world. There's different forms that it takes, but generally it's not available everywhere. And so there are online resources. There's actually programs specifically for women. There are at least a couple programs that help people raise money for integrative care or can give you ideas about how to utilize it. So those things are kind of building. There's a lot of online approaches as well when it comes to diet, lifestyle, stress management. What you can't really replicate from that standpoint is the hands-on interventions. And I think we just have to keep doing the work when it comes to research to get to the point where there's more insurance coverage. That's how our healthcare is done. And I think it is building. But once we get to that point, then, you know, then it'll be about how to have more providers be trained.
Are there any treatments that we haven't discussed? And if so, how would they be used?
Well, I get a lot of questions about natural products. So, you know, we've talked a lot about symptom management. Certainly, I talk a lot about diet and exercise. But then natural products have their, like supplements, have their own place in this. And a lot of it is answering questions. Nowadays, a lot of people go on the internet. We know that it may not be all patients, but many patients will on their own take supplements and often do not talk about it with their oncologist. And that can potentially have negative consequences if there's interactions, if there's side effects, etc. So part of it is kind of helping someone really navigate that whole situation. And then there are times where some supplements I have found help with some of these symptoms. So taking a very targeted approach, I'm a fan of aromatherapy, for example, and essential oils. There's a whole bunch of these kind of things that are easy to employ and that ultimately do make people feel better.
So bottom line here is this is a quality of life issue, right? And that's huge for people dealing with cancer. Can you tie a bow on this discussion? Like, what's the takeaway? Who would benefit most from seeking out this kind of care?
I think you can make the argument that everybody can benefit. Certainly, everybody has stress. And so part of it is my goal is to use this approach at every stage and really in as many locations as possible. And we have only so much capacity, but that's the goal. And, you know, everybody can utilize stress management. A lot of our patients in survivorship, so, you know, after they're done with treatment, many people can use education on lifestyle. And that may come from other sources. It doesn't always have to be integrative oncology, but I think most people could benefit from that. And then anybody who has symptoms, at least think about how we can incorporate that, specifically pain anxiety, depression, fatigue, those kind of things. And there are others as well that we've touched on, some of them. But I think anybody could utilize our services and see if it helps them. And then, you know, if it does, great.
Thank you, Doctor, for your time and for giving us hope today.
Thank you. And I think hope is part of this, is allowing people to feel like they can do something for themselves and do it in a way that they feel comfortable. It's giving people some choice and some empowerment.
Dr. Santosh Rao, Medical Director for Integrative Oncology at University Hospital's Connor Whole Health in Cleveland. Thanks again for joining us. Remember, you can find and subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Search University Hospitals or The Science of Health, depending on where you subscribe.
And for more health news, advice from medical experts, and The Science of Health podcasts, just go to uhhospitals.org/blog.